Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you, your family, your friends are enjoying the nice weather. Hope you're all staying healthy. We are happy to have you here with us today, and we actually have a few things we need to talk about that have taken place on June 16th, because we actually have a few birthdays, some pretty good athletes, and we have some very important dates in history as well. It was on this day, June 16th, that Panamanian boxer Roberto Duran was born. Of course, he was born down in Panama. Do you realize, this is going to hurt a little bit, that Roberto Duran turns 70 years old today? Yeah, Duran held world championships in four different weight classes: lightweight, welterweight, light middleweight, and middleweight, as well as reigning as the undisputed and lineal lightweight champion and the lineal welterweight champion. Roberto Duran is also just the second boxer in history to have competed over a span of five different decades. The first was Jack Johnson. But you know, Duran was just such a versatile fighter. He was so technical. He would pressure you. And of course, he had those hands that earned him the nickname Hands of Stone, because Roberto Duran could hit you like a ton of bricks. I would have loved to have seen Roberto Duran fighting Floyd Mayweather, both of them in their prime. I think that would have been really, really interesting. Happy birthday to one Roberto Duran. And we have another pretty good athlete that was born on this day, because recent 2021 PGA Championship winner Phil Mickelson is actually turning 51 today. He was born on this day in San Diego. Do you realize that Phil Mickelson has won 45 events on the PGA Tour, including six major championships, three Masters titles, two PGA championships, and one Open championship? With that win just a few weeks back at the 2021 PGA Championship, Mickelson became the oldest major championship winner in history at the age of 50. He is already turning 51 now. But Mickelson is one of just 12 players in history to win three of the four majors. Happy birthday to Phil Mickelson. But it's not just birthdays that we have today on June 16th. We actually have some pretty important dates in sports history, because it was on June 16th, back in 1975, that the Los Angeles Lakers franchise changed forever. Because it was on this day that the Milwaukee Bucks decided it would be a good idea to trade a guy by the name of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and his teammate Walt Wesley to the Los Angeles Lakers for four players. I mean, they got four players. What a deal, right? They got back Elmore Smith, Brian Winters, Junior Bridgman, and Dave Myers. Yeah, that's a pretty fair trade. That trade, of course, would change the Lakers forever, as Abdul-Jabbar would go on to win five championships with the franchise. That's not all. One more date we should probably mention that took place on June 16th. Kind of interesting to think about when we think about what's going on right now in amateur athletics. But it was on June 16th, 1909, that an athlete by the name of Jim Thorpe would make his pro baseball pitching debut for a team called Rocky Mount. Thorpe actually got the 4-2 win, but there was just one problem with him pitching. By playing semi-pro ball and getting paid to do so, it was ruled that Jim Thorpe was no longer an amateur, therefore he had to forfeit his Olympic gold medals that he would go on to win in the 1912 Summer Olympics. A member of the Sac and Fox Nation, Thorpe became the first Native American to win a gold medal for the United States. But when you think back to Jim Thorpe, this is one of the most versatile athletes ever. I don't care what era. He would have been good anytime. He won two Olympic gold medals in the 1912 Summer Olympics, one in the pentathlon, the other in the decathlon. He played American football, both collegiately and professionally. He played pro baseball, and he played pro basketball. In 1983, 30 years after he had passed away, the International Olympic Committee decided, you know what, we should probably restore his Olympic medals, because the decision to strip him of those medals actually fell outside of the required 30 days. So after he was already gone, they restored his Olympic medals. Way to go, IOC. Solid, meaningless gesture there. You know, when you think about it, a lot of these organizations that are supposed to be in the business of like helping people, especially young people, but you think of like the International Olympic Committee, you think of the NCAA, I don't know, Congress, all groups that are supposed to advocate for people, they rarely actually do anything to help people ever. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us your favorite corrupt organization ever. We would love to hear from you. Feel free to hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you need a little advice. Be sure to reach out. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, be sure that you stop by dailydosports.com, because we are putting up new articles each and every week. You want to make sure you stop by and check those out each week. We'll give you something to think about, something to listen to. And trust me, it won't just be the podcast regurgitated again. We're going to give you something different. Usually my article is going to be something a little more Colorado flavored, although we will touch on big stories. And then you've got Young Jimmy, who is writing articles over there as well. Make sure you stop by dailydosports.com and check out the latest work. Plus, we do have a link to the podcast. We do have a link to our gear. We do have a link to the YouTube video. So be sure that you stop by over there. Speaking of that gear, we're all doing that online shopping, right? Be sure to stop by tpublic.com and pick up your Daily Dose gear. You can see our standard Daily Dose gear here in the YouTube video, but we've got a few designs over there you can choose from. If you want a sweatshirt, a t-shirt, a hoodie, maybe you need a new coffee mug for the office, be sure to stop by tpublic.com. They are always doing sales over there. Just search Daily Dose. You will find exactly what you need. Today on the show, I actually have a little bit of business that I need to take care of this week, but never fear, because we have a Daily Dose from the past to play for you today. We are going back to the summer of 2015, and I had actually just gotten back from a trip to California. And yes, I went to that dreaded rodent land, that overly ridiculously expensive mouse park in the Anaheim area. Got to talk a little bit about that. Plus, we have some NFL to talk. We have some Major League Baseball that we talked this week. And we even have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you. So sit back and relax and enjoy a throwback episode of the Daily Dose. Wednesday, August 12, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you are going to get anywhere else. You know, if you pride yourself on being a little more informed, if you want some different sports takes than you get anywhere else, if you want to be the smartest person in your office, check us out. Subscribe on iTunes or anywhere that has podcasts. You can go to Podcast Republic, you can go to Podcast Blaster, you can go to iPodder. Of course, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast there. First off, if you would like to contact me, you can hit me at Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. Same name for Facebook, Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. If you want to go over and check out our website, go over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Articles go up every single week. Have a couple different things that are coming out every single week that you are going to want to keep an eye on. Head over to the website. Check it out. I think you'll like it. If you would like to email the show, you can email the show. We have done an email show where we read some of your emails. We get some really good emails. If you would like to email the show, dailydosesports@gmail.com, you can contact us here at the show. You know, we've had a few different shows recently. We've kind of been getting through this dry time during the summer. Done some top fives. Done an email show, took a look back at some of the past Daily Dose shows that we've done previously. And now we're kind of, you know, get back to our regular format. And I have some things coming out for you that I want you to know about. I have a few things that I want to let you know about. First off, football season is coming. Football season is coming. In fact, we have preseason football underway. I'm here in Denver, Colorado. The Denver Broncos play on Friday night. Got a preseason game. It's just preseason, I know. But I just want you all to know we will have a college football and an NFL preview for you coming soon. Not only will I do that here on the show, on the podcast, we'll go through and we'll preview some of the top teams. We'll preview some of the division races. We'll preview some of the conference races in college football, give you an idea about maybe some Heisman candidates, give you an idea of maybe who I think is going to do well in the playoffs. We'll give you all those things. Also, over on the website, I'm going to do a pretty big preview of all the teams. I'm going to preview all of the major conferences in college football. I'm going to preview every team and every division in the NFL. Some things coming for you here in football season that you do not want to miss. I will also, try to help you out a little bit with your fantasy football team. I know you've got your fantasy team. You're in your office pool. You're in your pool with family members or friends or whatever it might be. I will, upcoming, and I'll let you know exactly when. I don't want to do it too late because I know some of those fantasy drafts, start actually pretty early. You don't want to draft just yet. You don't want to do that just yet because there's going to be too many injuries. There's still going to be players shuffling around. There's going to be things that happen, like we saw yesterday in the news. But I will have some things coming up for you fantasy football wise. Again, no one gets you ready like the Daily Dose. You've seen what we do with March Madness. You've seen what we do, with NBA playoffs and the Super Bowl or whatever it might be. The Daily Dose gets you ready like no other. We will get you ready for football season. Today on the show, got some NFL things we want to talk about. Got some NFL news, got some things going on right now in the world of the NFL that we want to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball. Got a few stories that we missed because we were doing those kind of different shows. And of course, today we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to go anywhere. You don't want to miss that. You know, last week, I got out of town. I got out of the Mile High City. I don't do it very often, I'll be honest. But I got out of Denver for a little while, went out to the left coast, went out to the Los Angeles area, and spent some time with family out in California. Good time. Good time. Love my family out in California. Always good, spend some time, relax, break some bread, hang out with the family. Really, really enjoyed our time that we had out there. Had an earthquake. Woke up to an earthquake one morning. Now, I'm from Colorado. We don't have earthquakes. Woke up and everything is shaking. And it was a long enough earthquake that you had time to look up and look at each other and go, "Is this an earthquake?" Not quite used to that. I won't lie. Not quite used to that. It was insanely hot. Very, very hot out in California. Far hotter than it is here in the Mile High City. Had a family wedding, actually, that we went out there for. And like I said, always good to see the family. How weddings go. A Catholic wedding. And so they did the full mass, and there's no air conditioning in the church. No air conditioning in the church. Now, I am sitting in the church. I'm not going to lie. I'm sitting in the church saying, right now I wouldn't really mind that earthquake. Nothing. I'm leaning forward on the kneeler, like praying to God, "Hey, if you want to hook somebody up right now and just shake this place a little bit so we can get out of here and get some fresh air, I'd be okay with that. I would not have minded." But God is like, no. I heard your language when you were dealing with those California drivers. I'm not shaking nothing for you. Didn't happen. We sweated through it. We survived. It all went well. Hey, we went to, we went to Disney while I was out there. I've got kids. I've told you in the past. I've got kids. So we went out to Disney. Spent some time at Disney. And I know here on the Daily Dose, we have a lot of different listeners. We have a lot of different age ranges. We've got from like teenagers all the way up, to older. And I don't know how long it's been since you've been to Disney. I don't know if you've been to Disney recently, because maybe you haven't been to the so-called happiest place on earth recently, but let me paint you a little bit of a picture of what goes on at Disney. Because if you're wondering, what is Disney like? Let me tell you. And now this is during the summer. This is during, kind of the time before all the kids go back to school. It was pretty busy. Let me ask you this. This is probably the easiest way that I can describe Disney for you if you haven't been recently. Are you one of those Black Friday shoppers? Like, you're up at 2 a.m. after Thanksgiving to go out and, fight those crowds and find the great deals? I'm not that guy. I'm not that person. I can't stand the crowds. I prefer to do my Christmas shopping, like on Christmas Eve at a gas station that's closing in 10 minutes, like God intended. But you push through that crowd to get your PlayStation or whatever for 60% off, or you get your flat screen TV for like $199.99. Are you one of those people? Here's the only difference between that and Disney. The only difference. You're fighting the same obnoxious crowd. You're trying to push your way through this mob for the opportunity to purchase like a $13 corn dog that's going to give you diarrhea in a few short hours. That's the main difference. Other than that, it's the same thing as going out on those Black Fridays. Exactly. Exactly the same thing. You know, you go ride the rides. And you know, when I was younger, I remember going once. And when I was a kid, I remember going once. And you think of like Disney, the rides and everything. It's like, it's this mythical place. It's this magical place. You know, like I said, happiest place on earth. When you get in these rides, when you get in the, you know, whatever the ride might be, Space Mountain, whatever, they have the seat belts and the restraints, and those restraints are to protect me from getting hurt, right? And now, what I realize, that's not the point of those restraints. Because you see, after 6 to 8 hours of the heat and the crowds and the $9 ice cream bars, the people at Disney have realized that there are parents on the premises who are seriously considering standing up on Space Mountain and voiding their life insurance policy and just ending it all right there. And first of all, let's be real clear. They don't want to stop the ride. They don't want to clean up the mess. But secondly, they know that when the park closes, the Disney stores are still open. And they want you to be able to go out and buy a $30 coffee mug or a $40 t-shirt that you will never use again to remember the great Disney experience that you just had. Despite the fact that no amount of psychotherapy could possibly erase the memory of waiting an hour to spin around in teacups after eating like a $14 Tomorrowland turkey leg. Anyways. All right. I'm off my Disney rant. Went to Disney. It's a great time. I recommend it for you if you haven't been recently. Okay, coming back, we still have to get to some actual sports this week. What was going on back at this time in 2015? Well, the New York Jets were having some internal problems. Tom Brady was having some problems with the league. Carmelo Anthony was trying to smooth things over with the New York Knicks. And get this, the Colorado Rockies were trading away some of their top talent. You know, some things just never change. So let's jump back into a daily dose from back in 2015. Anyway, hey, we've got a lot of things to get to, so let's jump in to some of the news coming out. Obviously, one of the big stories coming out is that New York Jets quarterback Geno Smith got socked in the face yesterday by a backup linebacker. What is it? IK Anunoby? He apparently they had some sort of dispute about money, and Smith had kind of been nonchalant about it. So Anunoby socked him in the face, broke Smith's jaw, and Smith will have surgery and could be out for 6 to 10 weeks. Anunoby was immediately released by the Jets. He is eligible to sign with another team, although if he does, he could face some discipline under the NFL's policy, as this would be considered an incident of workplace violence. Now, a couple things to think about in this story. First off, I would have to think that the Chicago Bears have to be thinking about signing Anunoby just to knock out Jay Cutler. I don't know that, though. Secondly, Geno Smith's backup, Ryan Fitzpatrick, good news about him. He's got that huge, ugly beard, automatic jaw protector. This, to me, this just looks like exactly what the Jets are. Chaos, stupidity, incompetence. This encapsulates all that. I mean, if you are looking for a story that just sums up the Jets perfectly, yep, nailed it. This is it. Your starting quarterback is out because a backup linebacker felt he was being disrespected, so he socked him in the face. Perfect. Perfect. In other news in the NFL on Tuesday changed its settlement offer to Tom Brady, saying there will be no settlement unless Tom Brady accepts the findings of the Wells report. If Brady had accepted the findings of the Wells report, he would be contradicting his appeal testimony under oath to Roger Goodell. And Brady, meanwhile, remains firm on his settlement terms. He will accept a fine, no suspension, and will not admit guilt in any way. This is now going in front of a U.S. District Judge, Richard Berman. There's supposed to be some sort of announcement today. I'll be honest with you, looking at this situation with all the Deflategate nonsense, and I'm not going to dwell on that. We've talked about it in the past. I would say that there probably won't be any progress on this today. I know they are talking about maybe an announcement will come out today. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's going to go out to the beginning of September because it looks like neither side's going to budge. And you can't budge. You can't budge on this. If you're the NFL, you say, here's our rule. Here's what we did. Here's how we judged. That's what it is. If they back down, then it looks like they have no pull whatsoever in their own league. And Tom Brady can't back down either. Because he's sitting there saying, well, if I back down and accept a suspension, then I'm admitting guilt. And my legacy, like it or not, and I know there's people out there saying, oh, his legacy isn't affected. Yes, it is. It's already affected. Greatest quarterbacks in history. Let's see, Joe Montana and Johnny Unitas and Tom Brady. Well, Tom Brady cheated. It's already out there. It's already out there. If you think it's not out there, you're kidding yourself. Here's the only two questions that I have. The only two questions that I have in this whole situation, and I may have asked them before, but I only have two questions for this whole situation on Deflategate. One, why are the ball boys suspended by the Patriots? Not by the NFL. They were suspended by the Patriots. Why are they suspended? Why are they paying for something if you did nothing? And two, again, going back to this earlier, why did Patriots owner Robert Kraft accept his punishment of losing the draft pick, of losing the $1 million without any appeal if they did nothing wrong? Those things right there make it really, really hard for me to believe anything that's coming from the Patriots camp. And I don't sit here and say, well, the NFL has it all right. I'm not going to say that. I've told you that before. I think there's a little bit of truth and a lot of lying on both sides. A lot of lying on both sides. Brady destroying the cell phone. He says he does that with all his phones. I don't know. I don't care. The emails that came out, the emails, you know, about Peyton Manning and that kind of stuff, wasn't anything that I wouldn't have said. Hey, Peyton only has a year or two left. Okay. And hey, the Broncos were dumb trying to cover Gronkowski with Von Miller. Yeah. And we know that. So those weren't anything that were very significant. Those were anything of interest, at least to me, whatsoever. So I don't care about that stuff. But I would like to know why those Patriot ball boys are on suspension if they did nothing. They did nothing. Nothing was done wrong. Why are they suspended? Why are they paying with their jobs and their reputations? If they did nothing wrong, why are they out? And the Patriots did that. That wasn't a league thing. That was a Patriots thing. They suspended them. So I would like to know how that all goes down. I guess this whole proceeding has a situation where it will be decided by September 4th. You would think there would be some sort of a settlement, but both sides are saying they're not going to settle. Gotta be interesting to see which way this all goes. I don't know. I don't know which way this is going to go. I would imagine this judge is going to have to step in and basically say the NFL has overstepped its bounds or the NFL didn't rule on this correctly. That's the only way this is going to get settled, is the judge is going to have to step in and settle this. But what a ridiculous situation this whole entire thing is. Hey, did you see that Carmelo Anthony, New York Knicks forward, says that he would like to set the record straight regarding his opinion of the offseason the New York Knicks have had? Honestly, I thought we did a great job just as far as putting the pieces we need together, Anthony said on Tuesday at Team USA minicamp in Las Vegas. We didn't get DeAndre Jordan. We didn't get LaMarcus Aldridge. We got Greg Monroe, and we got Robin Lopez and Aaron Aflalo. And these rookies, Porzingis, I had him with me last week working out in the gym, and we're just trying to start this thing off right. I never said anything bad about me or Phil Jackson or any of the things that was going on. That's all false. That's what Carmelo said. And what this is known as is, this is what's known as, you might have heard of this, this is what's known as lying, what Carmelo is doing right here, because we've all done that. Remember how, like, your boss told you had mandatory overtime this week, And you walked into the room, man, my boss is a jerk. I hate this place. Can't stand this place. And then he came over and said, what did you just say? Nothing. I didn't say anything. What are you talking about? I said, I love my job. I love to be here every single day. That's what Carmelo just did, if you're wondering. That's exactly what Carmelo just did. Let's see. What all happened when I was out? Because we have a couple things that I want to touch on while I was out of town that I want to talk about. The Rockies, Colorado Rockies trades shortstop Troy Tulowitzki to the Toronto Blue Jays. Rockies got, I think he's like 65-year-old Jose Reyes and three pitching prospects. Three pitching prospects. Now, if you're not in Colorado, and I realize that we have listeners all over the country, we've got listeners in Oklahoma, we've got listeners back in St. Louis, we've got listeners out in California, we've got listeners out on the East Coast, out in Washington, D.C., out in the New York area, we've got listeners everywhere. We've got listeners around the world even, bizarrely. But if you're not here in Colorado, you don't understand the concept of pitching prospects, because I have heard the terms Rockies pitching prospects since 1993, and they say, oh, we got this guy in the farm system and he's great. Just wait until he gets out here. Yeah. Wait until he stands on the mound at Coors and gets yacked around to like the tune of, I don't know, like three innings pitched, nine hits, five runs, and an ERA of like 15. I've heard all that stuff before. These guys got rid of Tulowitzki to get rid of the salary. Let's be real clear about that. Meanwhile, you know, everyone, we've all been kind of looking at Toronto, throughout the season. You know, yeah, they got some offense. Got some offense. But we know their pitching and their defense will win down the stretch, and they don't have that. And so when they went and got Tulo, you were like, well, he's a decent glove, but it's kind of just more offense. Maybe. Can he hit it on the road? I don't know. But it didn't, when they got him, I was like, yeah, so what? Big deal. Still not enough pitching. And then they got Mark Lowe. And then they got LaTroy Hawkins. And they kind of beefed up that bullpen. And then the Blue Jays pulled the trade with Detroit and they get David Price. Uh-oh. On July 28th, the Blue Jays lost to the Phillies and were a game under 500. They were 8 games behind the New York Yankees. Now, as of today, the Toronto Blue Jays have won 12 of their last 13. They are a half game behind the Yankees. Now, Yankee fan, you don't need to panic just yet. You don't have to go completely panic mode. A lot of time still left. Got a lot of season still to play. But I'll tell you what, you might want to keep that panic button really handy. You might need to start crushing that thing with like a sledgehammer really, really soon. Because Toronto is coming. And now they have some offense. Oh, and they also have some pitching. And they've also bettered themselves, and they're getting production out of their young kids as well as their veterans. This is going to be a really, really fun race to keep an eye on as we go down the stretch. Can I tell you what I'm hoping for? Can I tell you what I'm hoping for in baseball? And I know I've said a lot of things that I'm hoping for in baseball, but I want to just throw one scenario out to you that I really am hoping for this season in baseball. You know, the Kansas City Royals are 68-44, sitting in first in the American League. The St. Louis Cardinals are 72-40, sitting in first in the National League. Can we please have these two meet in the series? Can we please have these two go to the World Series? Because let me tell you this, and you might not know this, if you're not around, and like I said, I'm in Colorado, but if you're not from kind of that area or spent any time in that area, and I've gone back to Kansas a little bit, I've gone back to the Kansas City area a little bit, these teams, fans, cities, they hate each other. They hate each other. They're only like 250 miles apart. Like Kansas City and St. Louis are not that far apart. And there's kind of that border thing going. These two teams hate each other. If there's going to be any interest from me in the World Series this year, please let it be these two teams. This will be a genuine grudge match. And that is something that I would actually look forward to. That is something that I might actually, I don't know, watch. I know that sounds crazy, but I might actually watch that. What else happened when I was out? UFC fighter, Ronda Rousey, knocked out, what is it, Betch Correa, whatever Correa, I think her name is. Either way, Ronda Rousey maintained her, UFC bantamweight title. And now, that she has, you know, she knocked her out, knocked her cold, wasn't even honestly, what was it, 34 seconds in, Rousey knocked her out. Now we have the media throwing some things out. And as usual, and it's not just the media, it's the public in general, but we have them saying some really, really stupid things about Ronda Rousey. The first thing, well, could she beat a man? Could she beat Floyd Mayweather? What if we got a man in there to fight? Can we just stop? She's not a man. When there's a guy that fights, like when Floyd Mayweather fought, and he wins, we don't say, well, yeah, but you think he could beat a bear? What if we put him in there with a bear? Do you think he'd win with a bear? We don't do that. And really, we really don't do that in any sport except it seems like the whole fighting thing. I mean, when Missy Franklin won gold in swimming, we didn't say, well, could she beat Michael Phelps? It's so stupid. I don't care about her fighting a man. One, I don't want to see that. Two, I don't care about her fighting a man. She's not a man. She fights females. She's a female. Stop being dumb and bringing that stupid argument up. I don't care about her fighting a man. I could care less about her fighting a man. And by the way, I'm hearing a lot of guys saying that they are like afraid of Ronda Rousey, that like they would be scared of Ronda Rousey. Let me tell you what. If I was in a room with Ronda Rousey, it would just be like, you know, get me a sandwich and bake me a pie. And I like to think that I'd probably make her like a turkey club with maybe some avocado and maybe a lemon meringue pie. Floyd Mayweather has signed up to fight his next fight with a number of fighters out there that people kind of wanted to see. I mean, Keith Thurman, Amir Khan, Kell Brook, Sean Porter, Timothy Bradley, of course, somebody like Gennady Golovkin, a number of fighters out there that we wanted to see Floyd fight. Floyd Mayweather has decided he will fight Andre Berto September 12th at the MGM in Las Vegas. Berto is 3-3 in his last six fights. Got knocked out by journeyman fighter Jesus Soto Caras. Lost to Robert Guerrero and lost to Victor Ortiz, both of whom Mayweather dominated very, very easily. Now, this is exactly why Floyd Mayweather can never be considered one of the greats. His entire career has been spent ducking fighters. His entire career has been waiting for a fighter either to get past his prime or trying to grab guys before they get to their prime and fight those guys. His record will never allow him to be among the greats. It just doesn't. When you try to compare him to some of the all-time greats, he doesn't have anybody on his resume. He has guys on his resume after they were good or before they got good. And this is just the latest. This is exactly what I expected. This is exactly what I said he would do when he had his previous fight, of course, where he ran around for Manny Pacquiao and we didn't really see a great fight. Yes, it's strategic, but the bottom line is he never fights anybody. And this is exactly what we thought it would be. He went out and find a guy that he knows he can beat. There's not going to be any kind of a gamble for him. He can go out and he can put up his undefeated record and no one's going to care. Now, in the upcoming weeks and months, you are going to hear about how, well, you know, Berto could give him a hard time. Berto has looked really, really good. Berto has actually, he kind of looks like he's going to knock him out. And then you have Mayweather talking about there's going to be blood, there's going to be knockouts. Do not buy this fight. It is a horrible fight. It's a horrible fight. Don't buy it. Don't pay for it. Don't get it. If someone else pays for it, maybe watch it. But this is such an obvious mismatch. This fight has no business whatsoever going on. There is no reason to have this fight. The only reason for this fight, so Mayweather can fulfill his contract and get an easy win. That's the only reason for it. Don't believe anything other than that. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL. Because, you know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined 8 inductees over the weekend. Want to talk about a few of the inductees that got in. Longtime San Diego Charger and short-time New England Patriot Junior Seau. Linebacker, 20 seasons, 12 Pro Bowls. He was the 92 Defensive Player of the Year, 6-time All-Pro. Junior Seau got in. Of course, Junior Seau had the issues with the head injuries. Junior Seau
took his own life. Very, very sad situation. His family went up and did the speaking thing for him. But Junior Seau, obviously, very, very deserving of getting in. Here's kind of the thing. When I look at guys that go into the Hall of Fame, here's the rule to look at. And I want to talk about a couple players that should be in the Hall of Fame that aren't. When you look at guys that go in the Hall of Fame, the rule of thumb, at least for me, is could I write the story of the NFL without them? That to me is the easiest way to decide, should they be in the Hall of Fame, should they not be in the Hall of Fame? Could I write the story of the NFL without them? Could you write the story of the NFL without Junior Seau? It might be kind of tough. Had some huge seasons. Had some really, really productive seasons. Junior Seau definitely belongs. Charles Haley, longtime defensive lineman, was with the Niners, was with the Cowboys. 5 Super Bowl rings. Finished his career with 100.5 sacks. Was the 90 and 94 defensive player of the year. Charles Haley was a little bit nuts. But another one of those guys that you say, could you write the history of professional football without him in it? Probably not. Running back Jerome Bettis. Jerome Bettis gets in. Bettis to me is a little bit tougher of a sell. Could I write the history of the NFL without him? Maybe. Didn't win the Super Bowl until he was, you know, past his prime and was getting ready to retire. Eight times he had 1,000 yards in his career. He was 5th all time on the rushing list when he got there. So I guess maybe that gets him in because when he retired, he was 5th all time in rushing yards, career wise. Wide receiver Tim Brown. Now, Tim Brown is a tough one because when you look at Tim Brown's numbers, they're very, very good. They're not great. A couple reasons for that. Tim Brown had 1,000 catches. When he retired, he was 2nd most in yards in NFL history. But here's the catch with Tim Brown. One, Tim Brown played in a different era, played in a completely different era, was not the pass-happy league that we see now. You could jam and hang on receivers for clear down the field, 5, 6 yards down the field. You could knock them out. You could hit them in the head. You could do all the things you can't do now. You could hit their quarterback. You could smash the quarterback. But here's the thing for Tim Brown. Who was throwing in the ball? Jeff George? I mean, Tim Brown did it with no quarterback. For the most part, Tim Brown did it with very little help. He didn't have any good quarterbacks. Todd Marinovich, Vince Evans. Like I said, he did it without the benefit of a great system. He was still running that old Al Davis bizarre thing from the 60s. And he didn't really have any good quarterbacks. So I understand Tim Brown getting in. Tim Brown, one of the great receivers of all time. I think he belongs in. I just think if you get caught on the statistics thing, you might look at Tim Brown and say, well, I'm not sure if he belongs. If you go by the rule, could you write the story without him? Probably not, because he carried that hideous Raiders franchise for a long, long time. Will Shields, Kansas City Chiefs, predominantly didn't miss a game in 14 seasons. Will Shields went to 12 Pro Bowls. He helped Priest Holmes. What was that in 2003? Priest Holmes had 27 touchdowns. Will Shields gets in. Very deserving there. Bill Polian. Here's the one problem I'm kind of having with the NFL, with the Hall of Fame situation. We're electing more contributors than we are players, which is a little bit odd to me. Bill Polian, and I'm not saying he's not deserving, contributor, 32 seasons in the NFL, his teams that he was involved with went to 5 different Super Bowls, 3 with the Bills, 2 with the Colts. He was the NFL Executive of the Year 6 times. Again, I'm not saying he's not deserving. I'm saying, why are we putting in so many contributors as opposed to players? Isn't this kind of about players? Ron Wolf also gets in as a contributor. Ron Wolf was the Oakland Raiders personnel man for 23 years, and in that time, this was obviously a while back. This is nothing recent, because when I read this next stat, you're going to say, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. In the time that Ron Wolf was with the Raiders only had 6 losing seasons. Pretty impressive. Ron Wolf then went over to the Packers, and when he joined the Packers actually went to back-to-back Super Bowls in 96 and 97. Turned the Packers around, because the Packers, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, the Packers were not the franchise that we think of now. Ron Wolf was a big, big factor in getting them back to being the Green Bay Packers that we know. Lastly, the senior pick for the Hall of Fame this year, Mick Tinglehoff. Mick Tinglehoff was a center with the Minnesota Vikings, played in 240 NFL games for 17 seasons, and was a six-time Pro Bowler. Again, I struggle sometimes with what the Hall of Fame committee looks at and says, okay, this guy gets in over this guy. Here's some guys that didn't make it. Orlando Pace, longtime offensive lineman. But, you know, he's kind of punished because he only, and I put only in quotation marks, he only played for 13 seasons. Orlando Pace was a seven-time Pro Bowler. Could you write the history of the NFL without Orlando Pace? I'm not sure you could. Because remember what he did protecting Kurt Warner with the greatest show on turf. You had some pretty amazing seasons up there with the Rams. I feel like Orlando Pace should probably be there. Marvin Harrison. You know, Marvin Harrison actually has 23 more touchdowns than Tim Brown. And again, I'm defending Brown. I think Brown belongs there. But I think Marvin Harrison belongs there as well. The thing that catches Harrison is everyone looks at him and says, well, yeah, but you played with Peyton Manning. You played in that offensive scheme. You had the passing offense and you had that kind of thing. So Marvin Harrison, maybe you're not quite as deserving as some other people. I don't know if I buy that exactly. I don't know if that quite sits well with me. And then I'm going to be just a total homer. And I'll admit it. Denver Broncos, Terrell Davis ought to be in the Hall of Fame. We may have to do a show about players, maybe just across the board in a number of different sports that ought to be in the Hall of Fame. But Terrell Davis ought to be in the Hall of Fame. There's a lot of other guys that should be in as well. How is Terrell Davis not in? Again, could you write the history of the NFL without Terrell Davis in it? No. No, you couldn't. Super Bowl MVP, when the Broncos beat the Packers in Super Bowl 32, league MVP in 98 when they go 14-2 and then win back-to-back titles. How is Terrell Davis not in there? You're going to say, well, he only played this amount of years. Yes, so did Gale Sayers. And I don't know that Gale Sayers had the championships and the MVPs that TD did. So again, it's not about the stats. It's not to me. I understand longevity if a guy did it for a year or 2 years. I get all that. But could I write the history of the league without them? If not, then there are some players that need to go in. And we have this mentality when it comes to any Hall of Fame. Baseball and football are the ones that stand out the most to me. But when we're talking about the Hall of Fame, we have this mentality like, well, no, we have to keep you out for a couple years and we're not going to let you in on the first ballot and you have to wait your turn. And I don't know if I get it. If guys belong there, they belong there. We could only elect, you know, three guys a year, whatever. If these guys belong there, put them in there. Because here's something to think about. Every single year, we have more and more people become eligible, and then it bumps, you know, players like Orlando Pace, like Marvin Harrison, like Terrell Davis, like some of these players that absolutely belong in the Hall of Fame. It bumps them back. I'm going to talk about another player that belongs in the Hall of Fame without question here in a few minutes. But there's just some guys that keep getting bumped back. Here are some guys that are going to be up for induction next year. Brett Favre. Brett Favre's going to be up. That's a first ballot. He's in. He owns so many records. He set so many records. Brett Favre is in. Terrell Owens is up next year. Does Terrell Owens get in? Would you take Terrell Owens over Marvin Harrison? I struggle with that. Terrell Owens is one of those guys, and don't get me wrong, big, strong, fast, talented, put up some huge numbers, of course, in an era when it was a little bit easier to do that, but Terrell Owens, I always just, maybe I shouldn't do this. I always kind of group Terrell Owens and Randy Moss in the same kind of person. Like, so amazingly talented. Seems like they kind of left a lot out there that they probably should have done and didn't do. Does Terrell Owens get in? I don't think he gets in first ballot. I don't know. I would struggle a little bit as a voter. Kevin Green. Kevin Green will be up. Does Kevin Green get in? Don't know if he will get in. There's a number of players waiting in line. And of course, Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy, the job he did down at Tampa and then going to Indy and winning a Super Bowl in Indianapolis, that team down in Tampa that won the Super Bowl, that was Tony's team. I know Gruden went in and coached them up and got them to win, but that was Tony Dungy's team. Tony Dungy probably belongs in the Hall of Fame. Again, I can't write that history without Tony Dungy. Would like to say rest in peace to Frank Gifford. Frank Gifford passed away this past week. And, you know, Frank Gifford, if you're too young to know Frank Gifford, and like I said, we have a lot of different listeners, Frank Gifford was a really, really good football player. You know, he played at Southern California. He played at USC initially, couldn't get scholarship there at USC, had to go to, I believe, a junior college and then end up, you know, making his way and earning his way onto the team. Ended up going to the New York Giants where he played his entire career. But here's something to think about when you think about Frank Gifford. Frank Gifford made the Pro Bowl at three different positions. Frank Gifford was a Pro Bowl running back. He was a Pro Bowl wide receiver, and he was a Pro Bowl defensive back. He went to eight different Pro Bowls. Retired in 64 and went on to a pretty stellar broadcasting career, doing stuff like Wide World of Sports and covered the Olympics a little bit. Eventually, Frank Gifford ended up with Howard Cosell and Don Meredith on Monday Night Football. Gifford passed away this last week. He was 84, although he was married to Kathy Lee Gifford for, I think, like 20 years, so he was probably really like 130-something. That sort of thing, I think, tends to wear on you. But, you know, RIP to Frank Gifford. Really, really talented guy. I know there's stuff out there right now. Oh, he cheated on his wife, or he did. Dude, Frank Gifford was no joke. And dude could do it all. I mean, the playing career, the broadcasting career, good looking guy. I mean, Frank Gifford, that's a dude that led a pretty amazing life.
Okay, coming back, we still need to get over to our Daily Dose top five this week. It was actually National Left-Handers Day this week, and we were counting down the top five NFL left-handed quarterbacks ever. Might want to see if you can come up with the quarterbacks that would make our list. Let's continue right now with our flashback episode to a Daily Dose from the past as we begin our weekly Daily Dose top five right now.
As we do every single week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose top five. Our Daily Dose top five this week, I don't know if you realize this, and you might not. Do you know that tomorrow is International Left-Handers Day? Tomorrow on Thursday? International Left-Handers Day. Are you lefty? Are you lefty? You know, when I was a kid playing sports, I always wanted to be left-handed. I really did. Left-handed quarterbacks, I don't know why, but they threw just a little bit different of a pass. It looked a little bit pretty. Left-handed, you know, baseball, you know, in baseball, when you're a batter or a pitcher, I don't know what it is about a left-handed batter, but a left-handed batter, just a prettier swing. Left-handed pitcher, obviously a little bit tougher to hit. And then, you know, like basketball and stuff, it seemed like you could always get your shot off a little easier if you were a lefty. I always wanted to be left-handed. My dad was left-handed. And so I think that's why I always wanted to be that. But because it is, International Left-Handers Day tomorrow, if you're a lefty, enjoy the day. I thought we would count down the top five greatest left-handed quarterbacks of all time. Top five greatest left-handed quarterbacks. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're going to say, this is just an excuse for you to put Tim Tebow on a list. No, I'm not going there. I'm not putting Tim Tebow on this list. He didn't make the list. But here we go. Our Daily Dose top five greatest left-handed quarterbacks ever. First off, I would like to say this. I'm going to hand out an honorable mention. And the only reason I'm going to hand out this honorable mention is because there is a player that did not make our list, and I'll tell you why. Because he just wasn't good enough. His record wasn't good enough, but he was so much fun to watch. Our honorable mention is going to go to the Seattle Seahawks quarterback, Jim Zorn. Jim Zorn played back in the 70s when the Seattle Seahawks were just forming. I know right now, Seattle, if you're a Seattle Seahawks fan today, you just went, who? I know. Jim Zorn. They have no idea who that is. Like, the last quarterback they remember is Russell Wilson, and that's the only quarterback they even know who it is. Yeah, Jim Zorn was a pretty good lefty back, for Seattle back in the day, back in the 70s, early 80s. Jim Zorn had 111 touchdowns. He was a scrambler. He was an exciting quarterback to watch, threw for 21,000 yards. Problem with Zorn, his winning percentage wasn't great. He was playing for a startup franchise. They were just getting going. The Seahawks struggled early on. His overall winning record was 44-62. And so he didn't quite make our list, but Jim Zorn, I know as a kid watching Jim Zorn, they put the Seattle Seahawks in the NFC, what was that? West, I think originally. And then they switched them over to the AFC West. So here in Denver, we saw the Seattle Seahawks a lot. I saw Jim Zorn a lot. Guy was an amazing quarterback, and you might remember him from his coaching fiasco when he tried to coach the Redskins. But back in the day, Jim Zorn was pretty good. Moving forward, our number five, greatest left-handed quarterback ever. Number five, this guy, I think is still in the league. But I've got to get him in there. Stats-wise, 131 touchdowns, 22,000 yards passing, played with the Falcons, played with the Eagles, played with the Jets. Michael Vick, another guy that was just so, so exciting to watch. You know, Mike Vick has over 6,000 yards rushing the football. Pretty solid record, 59-50-1, won 54% of the games that he played in. I guess the thing with Vick that you always looked at was you always kind of felt like, dude, you're so close to just being great, but he never quite took that next step. Obviously put up some huge numbers, was a pain to try to defend in his prime, and then obviously had the issues legally and the problems that took him out of football for a while. But Michael Vick, definitely one of the greatest left-handed quarterbacks ever to play. Number four on our list of greatest left-hand quarterbacks. And here's a guy that probably won more than you think he did. This guy had 184 touchdowns, threw for over 32,000 yards, and won 52% of his games. Granted, he didn't play as many games, but when he was with Jacksonville, Mark Brunell was pretty good. And I remember vividly in 96, Mark Brunell leading a Jaguars team that had no business coming into Denver and beating the Broncos in a wild card playoff game or in a divisional playoff game. Came in here, just went crazy on Denver. We all remember the long pass to Jimmy Smith. Mark Brunell was a guy that I don't know if he gets put into, some of the upper echelon of quarterbacks. I'm not going to say he's one of the greats, but Mark Brunell's a pretty darn good quarterback. Won 52% of his games, 78 and 73 as a starter. Mark Brunell, pretty good lefty. Number three on our list. And this guy, I think, gets a little bit of a bad rap. Now, some of his bad rap is because he's gone into the announcing thing, and sometimes his mouth gets him into trouble. But playing for two bad franchises with the Bengals and the Jets, Boomer Esiason threw for 247 touchdowns in his career. He had 37,000 yards, and he was 80 and 93 as a starter. But he played on bad teams, bad franchises, didn't have a ton of help, took the Cincinnati Bengals to the Super Bowl. Let me repeat that. Took the Cincinnati Bengals to the Super Bowl. I mean, there's got to be something said for a guy that can do that. Also had some success with the Jets, which, as we can see with Geno Smith, is not exactly the easiest thing that you could do. Boomer Esiason, very, very good. Big, strong kid. Big arm, but I can remember a number of times watching Boomer. I think he's a guy that's a little bit underrated only because he played on such bad teams. He didn't always get to play on big teams and with big time talent. The players around him, who was playing on those Cincinnati teams, who was playing with him? James Brooks? I don't even know. Icky Woods? I mean, it wasn't like he was surrounded with a ton of talent, but Boomer Esiason was always made the team pretty respectable and tough. Tough as nails. Guy would get hit. Get up, go back to the line of scrimmage, and do it all over again. Very, very tough guy. Very, very good left-handed quarterback, Boomer Esiason. Number two on our list. Now, I put this guy at number two. And when I read his stats, you're going to say, well, he shouldn't even be at three or four. I'm just going to read his stats. I mean, because you look at Boomer Esiason, 247 touchdowns, 37,000 yards. This guy, to quote John Gruden, 194 touchdowns, only had 28,000 yards. But his record stands on its own. This guy should be in the NFL Hall of Fame. This is another one of those guys that is getting passed over for the Hall of Fame because all we are doing is looking at statistics and we say, oh, well, his statistics don't add up. I don't care. I could care less about his statistics. I can look at things and with my eyes, I can judge and say, this is a guy that belongs in the NFL Hall of Fame. This is a guy that should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame because what he did and his winning record, his record as a starter, 96-49-1. 64% of the games he played and he won. Ken Stabler should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Ken Stabler, definitely one of the greatest left-handed quarterbacks to ever play the game. And again, when you look back at a guy's, he won a Super Bowl. So it's not like you sit there and say, well, he didn't win any Super Bowls. The only team that was beating him out for the Super Bowl was the Pittsburgh Steelers that was loaded with all this talent. And it would either be the Steelers or the Raiders getting by every year. Those were the epic battles. Those were the things that was the only thing that kept Ken Stabler from winning more Super Bowls were those loaded 70s Steelers teams. Ken Stabler, the things that he did with the Raiders, the wins that he got at the last second, the way that he carried that team. I'm saying this as a Denver Bronco fan. I hate the Raiders. Ken Stabler belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Amazing, amazing career. And his win-loss record speaks for itself. Get away from the stats thing. I don't care about the stats. You can't write the history of the NFL without those 70s Raiders teams and without Ken Stabler. You cannot do it. It's impossible to do. Ken Stabler ought to be in the Hall of Fame. Now, you might be sitting there saying, okay, well, who's number one? Best left-handed quarterback ever? Tim Tebow? I don't know. No, it's not Tim Tebow. I told you I wasn't putting him on the list. I might put him on one of the best college quarterbacks ever, but no, he doesn't make the list. Our number one greatest left-handed quarterback. Again, these numbers speak for themselves. 232 touchdowns, 33,000 yards. This guy had 4,000 yards rushing the football. And his record, right there with Stabler, 94-49. He won 66% of his games. Steve Young, I gotta put him down as the greatest left-handed quarterback, who has ever played the game. Steve Young was an amazing player. And you know, when he was younger, when he first came into the league, there was talk that maybe he should play running back. He was that good of a runner. He sat behind Joe Montana, learned, Bill Walsh's offense, got that Bill Walsh system down. And when he got his opportunity, there is no question, Steve Young made the most of his chances, took the 49ers to the Super Bowl, put up huge, video game numbers on that march to the Super Bowl. Steve Young, our greatest left-handed quarterback of all time. So for all of you left-handers, hope you enjoyed that left-handed list. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will get back to our regular format, and we will be taking a look at all that we have learned over the past couple of weeks since we were out last week. A lot of things are happening. We will be catching you up with all of it. I have to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel. Thank you for giving us positive ratings wherever it is you watch or listen. Thank you for reading our articles over at DailyDoseSports.com. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the podcast, for sharing the articles, for sharing the videos. We absolutely love it when you do that. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.